got it. All right, here we go. Tom and Curly Show. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Certainly do appreciate it. Bucky's Auto Service Center's down. Think about it. 16 locations. They keep growing at this rate. They've been doing it for 50 years. If they keep growing at this rate, 50 years from now, there'll be 2, 4. Sorry, 50 years. 50 in the 16. Help me out here, Jacob. Remainder is 7. Diving in! 37. 34. Like, by the way, you haven't answered the question. It's one of the largest cities in the United States that doesn't have any professional team. The answer is?
I'm going to guess Louisville, Kentucky.
Jacob, what was the proper answer from the listener to the Tom and Curly Show?
Nobody guessed.
Austin, Texas. Austin, with 950,000 people. Wow. In Austin. They don't have a football team, a baseball team. And that was the question I asked Tom, because apparently in the big brain of Tom's, if there's all this information there, but it just takes a little while to find it because there's so much information there. There we go. All right, let's see.
I said it was below the Mason-Dixon line.
You immediately went south, and you started rummaging around in Texas, but didn't find Austin. Okay, let's see. William Barr has asked Apple to unlock the Pensacola killer's phone, and this has set up another clash, as they would say, with the folks there at Apple. Apple has actually had, I think, like since 2016, they've had, I think, 12 or 13 cases where the government wants them to get in there and create the back door.
We have asked Apple for their help in unlocking the shooter's phones. So far, Apple has not given any substantive assistance. This situation perfectly illustrates why it is critical that the public be able to get access to digital evidence once it has obtained a court order based on probable cause. We call on Apple and other technology companies to help us find a solution so that we can better protect the lives of American people and prevent future attacks. The evidence shows that the shooter was motivated by jihadist ideology. During the course of the investigation, we learned that the shooter posted a message on September 11th of this year stating, "The countdown has begun." During the Thanksgiving weekend, he then visited the 9/11 memorial in New York City. He also posted other anti-American, anti-Israeli, and jihadi messages on social media, including 2 hours before his attack.
So they want to find out, did he work with anyone else? Was he working solely alone? The weird part of that whole shooting thing was, weren't his buddies videotaping it?
Well, I think one was videotaped, but at the time, and it's been a number of months and the investigation is going on, so we'll have to see what they turned out.
Yeah.
It wasn't clear that they started videotaping it before.
Okay.
If there was somebody videotaping it before, that'd be mighty suspicious. But now the impulse is, the Defense Secretary, Espy, says, people just, when something's happening, people pull out their phone and start recording it. And if that's no indication of involvement. Right now they have no evidence, but they're looking for possible evidence, and that's what they're trying to do with Apple. Now, Apple has come out and says, that's ridiculous. We've been working for the last few months with these guys doing all sorts of, you know, turning over evidence and giving you access to files. But it's the encryption itself the big issue that Apple has. And their defense or their argument, and this came up with the San Bernardino shooters as well.
Those Islamic terrorists.
What they did there was they finally found a third-party person to break it open because Apple says, no, we do not want our customers to think that these encryptions are not encrypted.
Yeah.
And so their argument is that if we create a system that allows for encryptions to be unencrypted or hacked, that means the back door to all the bad agents and the bad actors in the world could also operate.
Including the federal government.
Way.
So in 2016, when they went, James Corrupt Comey said to Apple, hey, we need to get this. And then amazingly enough, just out of the blue, as described by the FBI, out of the blue, guess who the third party was that came in? Israel. How do they do it? Well, they got a thing called Cellebrite. And Cellebrite came in and they actually have one that does private and the other one that does government. And they were the ones that came in out of the blue. Just they happened to contact the FBI saying, we can crack it for you. Does anybody believe just out of the blue, Israel said, we can crack it for you? They were the ones that actually opened up the phone.
Barr
in the first
certainly
place.
Has a better relationship with Israel than the Obama administration. I would think that he'd have his act better together.
Well, apparently, Mr. Comey also had enough power to be able to get Israel to suddenly out of the blue determine what was going to be opening the phone. And then when he was testifying, he said, you know, this would also open up the doors for other agencies as well. That's exactly what Apple doesn't want. And I'm okay with this, even though it's the whole thing about the hostages got the gun to the head. And
Listen, you're okay with Apple.
I'm okay with Apple. I don't trust the government. Do you trust the FBI after we saw what they did with the FISA courts? I certainly don't trust the FBI with getting information off of my phone. If the private are finished, you can interrupt me later. And they'll let the FBI protect me from the government. I'm okay with that. So go ahead. Sorry about that. Yes.
Even with law enforcement, I think that's an interesting stance. I think I might agree with you on that.
Oh, good.
I wouldn't trust a bar's Justice Department as far as I could throw.
Eric Holder, absolutely not. Fast and Furious, completely above board.
No, the thing is that this is the dangers that can be used politically. One could argue, because this has been a governmental argument from the Obama administration, now continuing with the Trump administration, with the tech companies, and the danger is, are they using this high profile? Oh, this will be one that'll get them to crack, because they're going to look like they're pro-terrorists. In fact, Barr actually accused them of being pro-terrorists and suggesting that somehow they're on the side of evil, which they obviously dismiss. But are they just using this high profile case to finally get what they want and they'll be able to have access to everybody or not? So right now it's a battle, and it might be decided in the courts at some point whether Apple and any other technological company has to give up.
They're using the thing called the AWA, which is All Rights Act from 1789. And then Apple says 1789. And Apple says you can't use this as some sort of magic wand to wave over us. But here's what the law says back from 1789 is that the government is the U.S. courts may issue legal orders necessary and appropriate in the aid of their respective jurisdictions and agreeable to the use of principles of law. Traditional AWA has allowed the courts to facilitate lawful legal procedures when the precise means need not be on the books. So basically, it's like far-reaching. Even though you're not directly involved in the act of crime, Apple is not exactly – Apple did not pull the trigger, but Apple has some connection to the crime, so therefore they're able to sort of jump over a bunch of things and go over it and get Apple to participate in it, to force them to participate in the collection of evidence against the shooters. So that's the AWA, the All Writs Act of 1789, and that's what the government used to say. We're allowed to do this. We can force you because somehow you're connected to it.
Well, I think the least William Barr can do as Attorney General is to put on a powdered wig.
Yes.
If he's going to be referencing 1789 laws.
Well, no. That's the same thing the Obama administration did as well. That's the same. That's when Apple originally said, wait a minute, come on. Yeah. You can't do this. That was in 2016.
And they didn't. The other danger is, much like the Patriot Act, after 9/11, everybody, oh my God, we got to stop these people. We ended up passing legislation that in retrospect says, wow, that, we bit off way more than we could chew and got us into more trouble. And I think that is the danger in this particular case. However, you'd hate to think that there's a possible terrorist operation that's not going to be stopped because we didn't get through the encryption.
Why doesn't the FBI just lie to the FISA court in order to be able to spy on these people?
Well, I think you can. Nothing to do with encryption.
Encryption
is a different matter.
Getting information from them. Russia spies hack into the Ukrainian gas company at the heart of the Trump impeachment trial. Did they do this actually while the sham trial was going on? Did they get in there and get
What sham trial are you talking about? There's been no trial, period.
Oh, impeachment. I'm just waiting for the sham trial to get started.
Somebody's just said
sham down the line.
No, John has fully embraced Trumpism with James Comey, and now you're talking about sham. You're just adopting Trump's
language. I don't need to embrace I'm not embracing Trump. Okay, Nick. Really? That's an easy shot, Nick. It's a low blow. Okay. I expect
true,
more
though.
From you.
James Comey is above
board.
You.
James Comey is above board, Nick. Honestly, really? I'll meet you outside. I have a scarf on. I'm very feminine right now.
You're very fey.
I am.
You should have been down to the critics
organization. Because I decided to protect my throat. Like Tony Bennett. I talked to Tony Bennett's road manager, and he says Tony Bennett always protects his throat and wears a scarf. That's my new thing.
Okay. But that being said,
let's go to Russia.
In the impeachment trial, this is hilarious. Russia once again is doing Trump's bidding, whether he bids it or not. I know, we'll help. We'll hack into that prison. If we can find any dirt on Hunter Biden, I'll ship it right over, Donald.
Right.
So far, we don't know what they found, if they're going to release anything. But it's once again, they're hacking the Ukrainian gas company. I think it's amusing. I'm not quite sure why you wanted to do this story.
I just like it. I think it's clever. Because they must have
clever of the Russians.
They did get into it. Yes.
Yeah. No.
They must have busted in.
They successfully did it. by phishing. It's the GRU. If that name rings a bell, it's because all those Russian agents that are now under, you know, court order to, you know, turn themselves in, because they never will. They were the ones that did the original hacking of Hillary Clinton's campaign manager's files and the DNC. So they're at it again.
I wonder what they got.
That's right. No, nobody knows.
We don't know because WikiLeaks is gone now.
WikiLeaks is still there. It's just that
No, where's Julian?
Well, Julian's in trouble, but he's not behind bars now. Is he
on the run? Did they come in and get him?
I believe he's on trial. He's had some court dates.
So the GRE, by the way, also targeted a media organization founded by Zelensky, Ukrainian president. So they're coming at him with full guns blazing.
They just like to create enough disruption. They must figure, I don't know what they spent on those Facebook ads, not much, but they must think, look what he did, right? We sowed enough seeds of distrust that all of you guys with your big free democracy and one man, one vote, one time idea, that here we are. Look what we've been able to do. We've got impeachment sham. We've got this going on. We've got people going. We've really done a great job of dismantling the presidency.
It's not the impeachment sham. That's the one effort to fight the Russians. The problem is Donald Trump's election was more a result of what Russia was doing than the impeachment.
Oh, Russia got him elected. Nick, respond to that. Not Russia got Donald Trump elected. That's what Tom is saying. That's what you're saying, Tom?
I think when an election is decided by as few as 77,000 votes, there are all sorts of factors involved. That could have been one of them.
How about in previous years, before Russia was doing this type of thing, when less votes were involved?
Then what's the question?
Was Russia involved in Kerry Bush?
Well, the hunch is that they've made these inroads, and only in the latest election were they successful in getting their guy nominated and elected.
Let's see. Jacob pitched the story and didn't seem to care about it halfway through. Like a cat that's had like three or four litters, and as she's pushing out the last kitten, just kind of gives up on it. That's the sense I got on this story, didn't you, Tom?
Yeah.
Should we do it anyway?
Yeah, let's do it anyway.
All right. Well, Amy Clancy from Cairo 7 cared enough.
Channel 7 did a story. Let's listen.
Yeah, to talk about the man who bought a firehouse from the city and now has trouble for it.
A historic fire station, no longer in use by the city, up for auction in Seattle's Bryant neighborhood. It was marketed as a, quote, unique residential dwelling.
We purchased the property in 2012, I believe it was, and thought we had essentially bought a residential property.
For how much?
$712,000.
Krohn did some interior remodeling.
We've had a lot of family events here.
And for more than 3 years, his extended family and friends used the firehouse for holidays, celebrations, charity fundraisers, graduation parties, and as an office. Until this land use notice of violation arrived in July of 2016. According to the City of Seattle's letter, a complaint about this property had been received. So a housing and zoning inspector investigated and found violations of the Seattle Land Use Code. Krohn was ordered to discontinue all unauthorized uses, including but not limited to office and residence, because the legally established use of the property is as a public facility, fire station.
Because I thought it was sort of a joke when they said, well, it's still a fire station. I said, should I buy a truck? I mean, seriously, this is just crazy. You sell a residential property and then you tell me it's still a fire station.
According to a civil lawsuit Krohn recently filed, the 2016 letter was the first time the city had notified the Krohn family.
This is good. Why did Jacob not care about this story? This is good.
I lost faith in my pitch, but I
thought
you didn't
care about it. No, this is great. Okay, hang on.
The problem is the punchline.
Really?
Yeah.
I got 18 more seconds. You really want to do that to this? You want to kneecap Amy Clancy that way? Huh?
I'm just trying to explain why the hesitation on our ace producer.
That Fire Station 38 was not, as the city had represented, a residential dwelling. Krohn was also sued by Seattle for alleged violations of city municipal code for using Fire Station 38 as something other than a fire station.
What about that?
Wow.
Hold on.
If any seller sold a property as a residence and it couldn't be used as a residence, the buyer could seek recourse for damages. We're just trying to hold the city to the same standards that the rest of the community need to live by.
Do you think the city of Seattle knew that it was being marketed as a residence or should have known before the auction process?
The city hired a third-party agent to help sell the property, but the city had supervisory control over that agent.
No, that's crazy. There you go. Dory should be selling t-shirts for this. Hashtag
that's exactly
firehouse
right.
resident.
That's
resident.
It?
And that's it. That's all
that's
I got.
That's it? What so you mean, didn't even it. Get to the punchline.
Well, she had Amy Clancy had a very long package. I'm sure you can add okay. whatever she's missing here.
Here's the punchline.
Okay.
Kroon has since received his certificate of occupancy from the city of Seattle and now enjoys his firehouse as often as possible. But he and his attorney believe the city handled the entire promotion of the sale of Fire Station 38 improperly. And so they're saying, this is three-year-old outrage or two-year-old outrage. They've got the story. It's a good story. It would have been much more potent if you're saying, what is the city doing? The city has now resolved it, said, you're right. It's, you know, it's a firehouse. It was sold to you as, well, you could do whatever you want with it. So that is the kneecapped story. But 2 years ago, this is an outrage.
Oh, my. I'd like to apologize to all the listeners of the Tom and Friendly Show. We're supposed to be doing news, right? You know what news stands for,
not
Tom?
Olds.
Yeah. News. North, east, west, and south.
That's
what,
that's
what the nuns told us. It was always like, that's not the way people normally do it. They do north, south, east, and west, right? But then nuns went, that's what news means. North, east, west, and south.
Clunky.
It's clunky. All right, more clunky news for you. Let's see. Early retirement. It's the end of retirement.
Yeah.
Retirement was a canard foisted on the people, I think, of Germany and Russia. It was Otto von Bismarck that came up with it originally.
In the 1880s.
Yes, he did. It's a way to get the old people out. We'll pay you a pension because we had young people who needed to come in and start working.
Well, that's a good canard.
Well, people are... We got some more. North, east, west, and south. We come right back. Oh, yeah. All right. Tom and Curly Show, both of us back. I'm out tomorrow. Oh, I'm like kidding. I'm kidding. kidding. Jacob asked me yesterday, when's my next day off? I think it's like this. 7th or 8th of March or something like that.
Oh, good. Yeah. So we'll be in it for a long,
long time.
Long
haul.
Yeah.
Long haul, as they say. Okay. Hey, I'll be doing the ratings. Do you ever look?
Yeah. I mean, we're the top, you know.
I know we're not allowed to talk about it.
No. But we're the top show here at Cairo between 6 and 7, like 6 in the morning and 7 at night.
Okay. I mean, like 6 in the morning and 7 in the morning. Like for 1 hour.
Yeah.
Somehow we're the number one show.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. So that means you're not going to retire anytime soon. That's a big question. Everybody's like, when's Tom bail out?
Yeah.
Nice pause, Tom.
Yeah.
All right. I thought of the story that was in the Wall Street Journal, and I read a corresponding story in Forbes. I thought the most interesting fact just makes you go, boing, how about that? The first person to live to the age of 200 has already been born.
I don't believe it.
I don't either.
That just sounds ridiculous.
Good lordy. That people are going to be living to 125 and soon to the age of 200.
The average age, they claim, of somebody right now that's living right now will be 125. Now, 200 is the outside, but it's like even 125, the average, that just seems crazy. So the question is, whither retirement, John?
Yes.
If you're going to live that long, people are living longer. When Social Security was first put in a place, I know you like to go back to Bismarck.
I do.
You know, but the Prussians. But for us, it was put in when the average age of an American, they lived to be about 65. Mm-hmm. So your Social Security benefits would kick in at the age of 65. Mm-hmm. So if you happened to live longer, you wouldn't be destitute.
Right.
That was the whole thrust behind it. Well, now, as they point out in this article, they say, look, so that might not be quite fair. But he says, now most 65-year-olds look like 45-year-olds, you know, back in 1950 or 60. And because of that, our lifestyles, our lifespan is broadening, and so maybe people ought to start rethinking retirement. Retirement used to be you work your tail off till you're 65, then you just collapse in exhaustion, and you're going to spend your time on the beach or sleeping or golfing, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Now they realize that what retirement means is you're abandoning most of your own support structure
yes.
in your life. That what used to be taken up by churches or children or community organizations now is taken up by your work.
Because you are not going to church, and
that's
because
right.
you don't have children, you don't have that community, so you go to work in order to be able to have connections.
You have social connections, mm-hmm. and that is the stimulus. And if that's the case, well, are you going to be able to survive without that kind of social interaction? That's one of the big issues. And then the final issue about retirement, the best way to kind of ward off as best you can things like dementia
uh-huh.
is to keep an active, you know, work life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can be just as busy. In fact, I know a lot of people retire and they're just as busy now as they were beforehand. But instead of just sort of, shutting off your life and connections, people end up wanting to work longer. They have flexible jobs. They highlight Patagonia company.
Okay.
They realized that they had a lot of older people that were starting to think about retirement. Their top editor at Patagonia was going to retire. And they said, you know, why? And they said, well, I don't want to keep working full time. They realized we need to have a kind of a glide path rather than having somebody fall off the cliff, a glide path. And take advantage of all that you've brought to the company and all your sort of institutional knowledge.
Yeah.
So some of the things that they're having this person do as they kind of glide into retirement is work part time, talk to upper management about what you've noticed about trends here and there. They actually pay people to go abroad to speak and represent the Patagonian way. There are a lot of ways you can use people,
mm-hmm.
and if they want to cut back, the company wants to adjust and allow for that.
Well, what they had found was that work has become a lot easier, physically easier on your body.
That's right.
So because of that, you can work longer. Before, mm-hmm. you had to pick stuff up, lift that bale, tote that bin, and another drunk land in jail, whatever that song was, or, you're on the Erie Canal.
Yeah.
Way down on the Erie Canal. So you would have to be doing hard work, and eventually just wore you out, and then that's why people retired. The part of it is that if you don't have any interest in anything else outside of work, when you retire, you will be dead in like 18 months. I mean, they have just found like people that just give up, just stop working. They have nothing else. They sit in a chair and then they're done. Right.
Yeah.
So you have to have sort of side life going on. If you don't have that side life, then you will probably expire after retire. But in this case, to be able to live, my problem is, and your problem is going to be as well, Tom, that this is a physical job in the fact that you need to get up, you need to read, you mm-hmm. need to be constantly involved, and you need to have a certain amount of energy. At some point, you just sort of crap out. Seriously, we're not sitting around just at a computer. At a computer, it would be much easier. Like Jacob could live to be 125. Look at him over there, right?
That's right.
It's all the water, I think.
That's probably what it is. A friend of mine that does she handles a lot of very rich people's accounts and stuff. Sally, she said to me, she's had a number of her high net worth clients come in and adjust their numbers. Because the first question she asks you, or anybody that's going to work with financial stuff, will say, when do you expect to retire?
Mm-hmm.
How long did your parents live? Do you smoke? Do you drink? Can you talk to me a little about your health lifestyle choices? Because then, okay, we assume you're going to live to 90. You want to retire at 65. So we're going to need to fill that gap with income.
Yeah.
She says, people are coming to me and saying, you know what? I'm changing that number from 85 to 100. Now, how much longer do I have to work? Because you got to work those numbers to make it all, sort of pencil out at the end.
Yeah. So the question is, if you are thinking about retirement and can't afford it, now this is all in the assumption. A lot of people have to keep working because they can't afford it. They've gotten so much debt. So we're now talking about people retirement is an option. In fact, the guy who's writing this article is 42 years old. He met with a financial manager and he says, okay, I want to design my life so that I could quit at 65. And he says, why? Why would you want to quit at 65? If you love your job, he's like a travel writer, and he's doing a lot of stimulating things. Why would you want to give that up? That might not be the way to go. He ends the article by saying, we agreed to stick with the plan. At 65, I retire. I want to make enough money that I can retire at 65, but not that I will retire at 65. It just gives me the options.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what people love. If you don't have to keep working, then the question is, what is there out in life that you would do that you would like more than working? And if you have a lot of other interests, like right now, so I thought I was going to be an academic. If I had been an academic, and had just spent 35 years teaching at the University of Washington or Seattle U or something, and somebody came to me at my age and said, hey, I got an idea. Would you like to try doing a radio talk show? Uh-huh. I go, that would be great. That sounds like a fun idea. But the fact that I've been at Cairo here for 25 years, like, oh, well, maybe there's something else I'd like to do.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have that, I've talked to Michael Medved about this. Michael Medved says, what would I rather be doing? I get to talk on the radio for 3 hours a day with the news of the day. There's nothing more I want to do in life, so he'll probably, you know, do this until he drops.
Yeah.
It all depends on, are there other things that you would like to do in life before it's over or not?
Don't you find it also amazing, the statistic that was in the article, that you will work for 50 to 60 years on a job? It used to be that you worked 100,000 hours, you passed away, and then later retired. In this case, people will be working almost like 200,000 hours of their life spent, you know, going along the toil of work. When you think just about 100 years ago, the average life expectancy was, what, like 47 or something like that?
I think so.
And thank God for capitalism. We now have people living to be 125. And I just wonder,
and
you better find a whole bunch
safety
of
safety net.
Yeah, right. No, it's socialism destroys, capitalism creates. But the idea that someone could be 200 years old, you better have some outside interest if you're going to be 200 years old.
That's right.
You think?
I don't care how fun your job is. After 200 years of doing it, you're going to be damn bored.
Right. I got 80 more years to, like, kick out. Oh, my. Write to us at MyNorthWest.com. And if you got nothing better to do, you can text as well. The State Roofing text line, 989-73-989-73. Come on in, everybody. We do love to hear from you. What if it gets you a chance to be letter of the day? There's a reason to keep going. Right back. Rod Stewart? I know.
Rod.
Is it Rod Stewart? Get that. Somebody shmammal that, or whatever you say.
Shazam.
Shmammal.
I don't know. Jeez. Can't keep up with the kids today with their crazy lingo. I am so glad that I am not having to apply for jobs. The fact that you have to send a resume in, and then you got to get the... You got to get past the robot in order to be able to make it to the next level to talk to somebody else. Like a friend of mine who's 45, she said that she went to apply for a job with an airline, and she said, I had to get past a robot interview.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what was that like? She goes, oh, it was bizarre. You could tell the thing was just asking these questions, and you're giving these answers, and it's taking all the information. It makes you so unbelievably nervous. It was all over the phone.
Yeah.
So now, if you were in Korea, South Korea, they said the best thing is you could possibly do if you want to be able to be hired, what do they ask you to do with your eyes, Tom?
Smile.
And that's going to help you.
Apparently. So there are classes that are being offered, mm-hmm. and they're very popular in South Korea, to how to win over a robot. Mm-hmm. It's like as you go through life, you begin, if you have any emotional intelligence, you know how to work or massage a good job interview.
Yeah.
You know how to kind of. But when you're dealing with a robot, and especially like a robot over the phone, there's no need for personal, you know, contact. It would be tricky. And so one of the – they offer these like a three-hour package for 8626 translates into from 100,000 won in Korea. People learn basic techniques and steps. And one of them is, don't smile with your lips. That's not going to work. What you need to do is you smile with your eyes. Now, why a robot would pick up eyes rather than lips makes no sense to me. The other article that is in this suggestion, making your job application robot-proof, they say that really what you need to do, and this is the worst kind of resume building, but your resume should have specific on-the-job results, use meaningful job titles, and tailor your choice of words to match company's requirements. Because what the computer does or what the robot does say, Cairo Radio is looking for,
self-starter, which means we're not going to pay you much.
Self-starters. Yeah, people with no experience.
Right.
You know, people that are willing to live a
right,
live
anxious to learn, self-starter.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
But, you know, have a strong sense of community. Well, then you take your stupid, like, what do you do is you take that, you know how we all have purpose statements, you know, these goals and all that. take that literal language and put it in your stupid resume, and the robot will say, hey, self-starter on, you know, column A, self-starter on column B. You get the ding, ding, ding. We got a match. That's the problem is that you end up, it's like, you know how people are, you teach the test.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of, if you're a teacher, you want your two students to do well. You don't try to get them to understand the Renaissance. You try to get them, okay, Leonardo da Vinci, you know, between these dates, because those are the hard things that people are going to pick up on. That's what they suggest you do. You should use keywords that show hard skills, financial analysis, cybersecurity, these kinds of things. Then the computers will match them. And they say hundreds of thousands of applicants don't get past the computer because they don't have these arbitrary, word selections. So they say it's just one more. It was always hard to find a job. Usually you had to, find connections because otherwise, what's your resume? How's it going to distinguish
yourself from someone else, a thousand?
Now you just have one more layer to get through, which is the robots, which are pretty clunky in the way they operate so far.
This crappy thing that Amazon does, I'm sure the others do as well, that if you want to hire from within, you still have to do like four or five interviews that are outside. They have no intention of interviewing you, but they call you in. They make you go through a bunch of stuff. You're sitting there, and you're like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a friend of mine who's been called in twice.
Yeah.
And he says, I know they're just doing it just to do it. So I use it as practice for interviews.
That's probably smart.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's sort of like the Rooney Rule in the NFL. You have to interview minority candidates.
Right.
But, minority candidates say, we don't have a shot. Right. We just, we're the token so they can pass.
Let's see. You're black.
Yeah. Come on in.
Come on in.
All right. We come back. It's the top of the hour. It's a whole bunch of new segments. This is where Jacob reorders the show. You don't know that's going to be on. That's all behind the scenes sort of stuff. You don't need to worry about that. Right back.